The next topic, the autobiographical element in Milton's poetry. Introduction. It is something like a paradox that Milton imbued thoroughly with the spirit of the Greek and Roman classics of antiquity as he was, should give a strong autobiographical flavor to his poetic work. One of the important tips that every schoolboy is given about poetry is that romantic poetry is subjective and classical poetry is objective in both content and execution. The romantic writer reveals his personality in his work, but the classical writer writing about general truth keeps his personality veiled. Thus, whereas Wordsworth is in the prelude gives an autobiography of development of his mind and Lamb unveil all the facet of his warm and energetic personality in his essay. Pope deals with general theme in an objective manner in his works like the essay on man and as the essay on criticism, but his differentiation is misleading if passed too rigorously and unthinkingly. Both the romantic and the classical writer reveals their personality in their work, though in different way. There is as much of Pope in The Rape of the Lock as of Shelley in The Ode of the West Wind, but each has his own modus operandi. Behind every book there is its writer, and the book is an expression of his personality. However, there are certain genres which lend themselves more easily to the process of self-revelation by the author. They are the essay, the lyric, the elegy, and so forth. But some other genres, such as drama and novel, are of a different character. From understanding of personality of a dramatist or a novelist, there is no obvious cut and dried method. The reader has to find direction from indirections. Milton is broadly speaking a classical poet. Even then, he puts too much of himself into his literary works, or we are not here referring to his prose work, most of which are in the form of pamphlets. In his prose works, Milton obviously gives his own thoughts and feeling, and thereby reveals himself. But even in his poetic work, we see both direct and indirectly his monumental personality revealed in all its facets, glittering as well as none too beautiful. Even into his only play, Samson Agonist, he managed to put something of himself. Thereby, he strikes a note of contrast with Shakespeare, to track down whose elusive personality in his play has been the despair even of the most industrious critic. Shakespeare is like Ariel of the Tempest, who is here, there, and everywhere, ever laughing at the toils of the erudite critics who perspire to set up his puckish spirit in their critical bottles. But the reconstruction of Milton's personality from his poetry present very few difficulties, as it is chock full of autobiography element. Coleridge contrasts Shakespeare and Milton in these words: Shakespeare's poetry is characterless, it does not reflect the individual Shakespeare. But John Milton himself is in every line of the Paradise Lost, and the Paradise Lost indeed in every one of his poem. It is Milton himself whom you see, his Satan, his Adam, his Raphael, almost in Eve, are all John Milton. And it is a sense of his this intense egotism that gives me the greatest pleasure in reading Milton's works. The autobiographical element in Milton's poetry does not mean much of the revelation of his outer life. It rather abides in his expression of his intellectual and spiritual character. Let us now examine the important poetic works of Milton with regard to their autobiographic importance. The sonnet is only one of the more disciplined form of the lyric, and like the lyric, therefore, is normally employed by a poet as a vehicle for a conveyance of his own personal emotion. The sonnet first appeared around the 12th and the 13th century in Italy, where its first notable practitioner was Dante. The next illustrious Italian sonneteer was Petrarch, who served as a model for the numerous French sonneteers. Yacht brought the sonnet to England in the 16th century, in the last year of which the value of the sonnet grew to its peak and hundreds of sonnet sequences comes to be written. In the next century, the most notable sonneteer was Milton. His sonnets, like the sonnets before him, are all personal in spirit and complexion. But there is one major difference. Almost all the sonneteers before him, Italian and French as well as English, had love for their theme. An overwhelming majority of their sonnets was addressed to their mistresses, real or imaginary. But Milton does not write of novel. Nevertheless, he is quite personal in his sonnets, which throw light on the various facets of this personality. Thus, for instance, the sonnet How Soon Hath Time, the subtle thief of youth, written by him and on his 23rd birthday, expresses a melancholy feeling that his genius has not ripened with years. My hasting days fly on with full career, but my late spring no bud or blossoms youth. When I consider how my light is spent in Milton's best known sonnet, therein he tells us how his sadness is at his early blindness, or half my days, and the prospect of his not being able to do his duty toward his maker on account of his blindness, he is disciplined by the spirit of potence, who points out, God doth not need either man's work or his own gifts. Who best bear his mild yoke, they serve him best. His state is kingly, thousand at his biding speed, and post over land and ocean without rest. They also serve whose only stain and wheat, El Allegro and second Penseroso. Milton's earliest important poem, El Allegro and second Penseroso, are not autobiographical in the narrow sense of the term, in so far as they fail to convey of the reader information about any important event in the life of the poet. Even then, they reveal the composite nature of Milton's intellectual setup, his love of nature, his disposition to be melancholy, his interest in classical mythology, his intellectual pursuit. All of them come in for expression in these companion poems. Comus, C-O-M-U-S. Comus is a masque, a genre which generally preludes the expression of any personal feeling. But Comus has a very strong personal flavor. The moral conveyed by it is that steadfast virtue manages quite easily to vanquish the evil design of clever and hypocritical vice. His moral is conveyed through the career of Alice and personification of virtue and her attempted seduction by the lustful magician Comus after she has been led astray in a wood. Of course, Comus does not succeed and Alice remains unchaste. Alice can easily be supposed to be Milton himself, who was also tempted as a young man by the brilliant exterior of Wes. Lewis observed in his Econexion, inverted comma, his heroine is himself. Comus tempts as he has been tempted, she resists as who did. He speaks every word in the poem. Comus merely expresses the appeal to the sense which young Milton has felt. The moral of the Muscu is Milton's moral high, disdainful and solitary. The final impression is one of the virtue remote from mankind and above it, sure and haughty virtue. Ignoring the multitude for the Milton's Comus, as for the Calvinist and the number of the elect in few. In order to come closed. Lycidas. Milton's next important poem is the pastoral elegy Lycidas, written at the death of his friend Edward King. The poem is as autobiographical as similar poem as by Shelley and Matthew Arnold, Adonis and Thyrsis, respectively. The immediate purpose of an elegy is to be celebrate the good qualities of the deceased and to express the depth of sorrow at the sad departure of a noble spirit, and very often a good companion. Milton does it quite effectively. But oh, the heavy change, now thou art gone. Now thou art gone and never must return. Since this effort, the woods and desert caves, with wild thyme and the guiding venom overgrown, and all their echoes mourn. Quids, obviously, Milton does think of his departed friend. However, there is more of Milton than of his friend in this poem. Lewis Ever, in this context, noted, comma, it is not King but Milton who should be sought in them. The lines of the poem, the death of his friend who was so young and whose future promised so much. Well, Milton to reflect on his own life. In order to come closed, there is an obvious conflict in the poet's mind whether to give his days and nights to poetry or to indulge in the pleasure of the flesh. Alas, what boots it with incessant care to end the homely slighted suffered's fright and strictly mediate and thankless misses? Are it not better than an other use to sport with Amaryllis and Sid, or with the tangles nearer seers? However, Milton's choice is made, for he has for his aim not worldly fame, but he must in heaven expect his meed. Incidentally, Milton's a Puritan as he is, takes an opportunity to lash the Pope and the corrupt clergy through the words of St. Peter. In order to come, the pilot of the Galleon Lake, you know, to come a closed. Such satiric fling are essentially alien to the spirit of an elegy. The Paradise Lost. Paradise Lost revealed in Lewis' words as a Milton, whose personality is incensed and self-centered, you know, to come a closed. His Puritanism, his misogyny, his austere nature and his anti-royalism peep through his great poem. Milton was married twice, but was not very happy. In Adam outburst against the first woman, we can hear the voice of Milton. Oh, why did God, creator wise, that peopled highest heaven, with a spirit masculine create at last this novelty on earth, this fair defect of nature man has to suffer? Innumerable disturbance on earth through female sinner and strange conjunction with this sex. Milton lesses the corrupt chevaliers of his age by representing them as son of Belial, who indulges in drunken riots in the street after they are flown with insolence and wine. Further, he takes opportunities here and there to express his anti-royalist feeling. He was a supporter of the Commonwealth and a champion of personal liberty, which were often denied or suppressed by the king. In the rebellion of Sutton against the Almighty, we can see a resemblance, however remote, with Milton's rebellion against Charles II, who had assumed the throne of England in 1660. His republican feeling had feeling led Milton to a kind of sympathy with the arch-rebel. Rebel Milton was, according to William Blake, of the Devil Party without knowing. It is debatable, no doubt. And Blake knew more about Milton than Milton about himself. However, though between Sutton and Milton there may not be a bond of sympathy, yet there is a between them a parallelism of situation. Sutton is an embodiment of vice in all its ramification. Milton knows it as gives it not only the adequate but a vehement expression. Disobedience toward God is a sin, but disobedience toward a corrupt ruler, distrustful of the liberties and welfare of his subject, is a different matter. However, here and there in Paradise Lost, Milton comes dangerously close to Sutton. A critic observed in a noted comma, "It is in the passage where Sutton speaks of the joy of independence and of the hatred which he bears to the tyranny of heaven's ruler that he reaches the almost commanding height of noble eloquence." The reason for this is obvious, for Milton was the great champion of popular liberty in his own day and gave up the best year of his life as well as his eyesight to the cause of England's fight against oppressions. Hence, Milton cannot help imparting to Sutton some of his own sentiments and putting him in the position of champion of liberty against autocratic rule. Paradise Regained. The Paradise Regained was a sequel of Paradise Lost. Milton revealed himself in his work as a strict Puritan. In the very beginning of the poem, we learn how, even as a child, Milton studies the Bible. "Above my ears, the law of God I read, and found it sweet, made it my whole delight, and in it grew to such perfection." Samson Agonist. Samson Agonist is a tragedy after the Greek classical example. Samson is the biblical character who figure in the Judges. His blindness and captivity in the hands of the Philistines bear an obvious resemblance of Milton's own blindness and suppression in the age of Charles II. In the end, Samson brings death to himself and destruction of his captor by pulling down a pillar supporting their palace. In Samson Agonist's cry, we can hear the complaint of Milton himself: "But chief of all, of loss of sight of thee I must complain, blind among enemies, woe worse than chain, dungeon or beggary and decrepit ease, O dark, 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 amid the blaze of noon, irrecoverably dark, total eclipse, without all hope of day." In Samson's indictment of his false wife Delilah, we hear the misogynistic Milton: "Out, out, Hannah, these are they wanted arts, and art of every woman falls like thee, to break all faith, all woe, deceive, betray." Milton's unwavering faith in God is echoed in Samson's word: "Just are the way of God, and justifiable to man, unless there be who think not God at all." The topic, the autobiographical element on Milton, over.